Welcome to episode 2 of The Flexible Movement.
Oh, hi, Pauline. You've been talking to a lot of people then recently about this project since we last met.
I have. I've spoken to so many people, and they all have different perspectives and experiences on the topic of flexible working. And what's actually been really nice is, well, A, they want to talk to me, which is always a bonus. But they have also connected me with lots of other people. And so very quickly, I've gone from sort of a core set of people that I really wanted to talk to having lots and lots of people, all with different opinions and working in different areas around flexible working that I've been able to connect with. So, yeah, it's been exciting.
Fantastic. And Matt, you've been looking at some of the interviews that have come out through this as well.
The thing that struck me more than anything else has been that we have got a setup at the moment, partly through the legislative setup and partly just because of, I think, attitude and belief, that the starting point for anything around flexible working is justifying why somebody should have flexible working. So it's very much the exception rather than the norm, but it's also framed as being the exception.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what frustrates me, and I base this on the number of interviews that I have done so far for this podcast, is that it's all down to culture and a bias. And when we talk about, you know, organizations changing their culture, the thing that's missing for me is how roles are designed and the embracing of flexible working for all people. Because one of the things that I've learned in this process is, you know, I live in my little bubble. I'm a woman, I'm a mum, and I haven't really considered what it is like to be somebody outside of that group who wants to work flexibly. So, you know, I interviewed a man who works flexibly, and he spoke about his experience of, you know, putting in a flexible working request and having it rejected because and then being told by his employer at the time, kind of off the record, oh, you know, this would have been a different conversation if you were a mum.
So I'm Mark Wilson. I'm an enterprise architect at Rigil, which basically means I work as a consultant helping customers to, it sounds very buzzwordy, but maximise their use of technology. And it's mostly Microsoft technology that I work with to help solve people's business problems. But I'm also a husband and a father to two boys who are rapidly growing up, both in years, so 12 and 14 now, and also in terms of the amount of time that they'll soon want to spend with their dad. So I'm really conscious that family time is really important to me. And work is something I do and hopefully enjoy, but it is not life. So I work 4 days a week, and it's a fairly new thing for me. I started this at the beginning of September, so we're 3 months in today. And then there's the thing that, you know, well, what's work? That's my paid work. So I get paid based on a 4-day week, but the rest of my time is pretty busy too. So my Fridays are a mixture of making some time for myself and what my wife recently referred to as life admin. It's all the little things that need to be done that there's no time in a normal working week and which make a big hole in family time at weekends. So I'm billed out to clients on a daily basis. So effectively my 4-day week makes me 0.8 of an FTE. So my costs are still directly proportional to the revenue that I generate. So I'm just as profitable as any other consultant in Rigil. And that's one of the reasons I ask for part-time working rather than compressed hours. I already work across multiple projects, multiple customers, so my non-working day is just part of that mix. And if I do it right, then people needn't really notice. They might get an out-of-office message from me, but I'm back in the day later. I'd also say I'm more productive in 4 days than in five. I'm still worn out by the middle of the week, but I'm more refreshed when I come back on a Monday. And I'm much more focused on what's a priority to deliver right now. I'm probably not doing 20% less, but I'm careful to make sure that I'm not dragged into calls, emails, etc., things like that on my non-working day. So I've got separate work and personal computers, separate work and personal phones, and that's a very crude mechanism for me to manage it. But, you know, my phones are diverted, and so, you know, I'm not contactable on my day off. I do know people who feel that they need to be available when they're not at work, and I think that's you know, different people deal with it in different ways. It's the same when people take leave. For me, when I'm on holiday, I'm on holiday. For some people, they're like, oh, if it's really urgent, just call me. And it depends on how you manage that.
And also, I spoke to a lady who doesn't have children. And again, she felt like she was sort of on the sidelines of flexible working. She would love to work flexibly, but didn't feel like she was in a position to ask for it.
My name's Heidi. I've worked in senior HR positions for companies like Barclays, Carnival, UK, Zurich, Tesco. And earlier this year, I kind of decided to take my love for all things HR, development, wellbeing and coaching and turn it into my own venture, something to call my own, really. We're now in the whole thing within the workplace where you have multiple generations working. So anywhere through, you know, retirement age gets put back frequently as well. People are working longer because of pension arrangements. So all of these different kind of generations in the workplace all want different things. And if you speak to most people will say, well, flexible working would be good in a variety of different forms. So trying to move away from that, it is just women in that sort of part-time element seems like the way to go. I think that many HR professionals and practitioners will know all of the legislation around flexible working. We have a professional body that also lends its support to anything connected to flexible working. CIPD create a lot of case studies around the case for flexible working to help support HR professionals in the workplace. So I think that's important to know. My personal view around HR practitioners and their involvement in it is that we are there to support the business. So you may have an HR manager sitting in a business that is really pro flexible working and wants to do everything they can, but actually it's around influencing at the top levels of the organisation. Because if the top levels of the organisation aren't committed to it, don't buy into it, it doesn't matter how good you are, in my own personal view, at the championing and the cause, it's just not going to work. Because, you know, an HR manager can't sit in different departments every day and, you know, kind of look at, well, Heidi's requested the flexible working, she's doing it, but she's not feeling part of the team anymore. You know, it's difficult for particularly one team, standalone HR professionals in those kind of organisations to monitor everything that's going on. I think that whilst HR isn't responsible for creating a culture that enables flexible working, that needs to be championed and endorsed by business and leaders. I do think we do play a key role in supporting those changes. You know, and that's around working with different businesses, trying to understand if flexible working could suit them, would suit them, help creating solutions, because I think it's important to remember that one size doesn't fit all.
And so I think that's kind of been interesting and frustrating to me, that this is all down to culture. And I actually, it's about 2 weeks ago now, I attended an event which was around culture change for public sector organisations. And heard from some great stories of public sector organisations who are undergoing culture transformation, or, you know, are pretty much there and have achieved it. And again, the thing that was missing was, you know, they want to attract talent, they want to retain talent, everyone's a leader, everyone has a voice, but all of those people are working in a traditional working pattern. And so it's like this massive element for me that is completely missing for any from any cultural transformation plan. It's just, again, this assumption that, you know, the status quo is 9 to 5 Monday to Friday. It's all down to culture for me. And again, I think it's an assumption as well that if you want to work flexibly, it's because you've got kids, and that's not always the case. You know, why should it be the case?
This is, you've given me the worst brief here. I'm introducing myself is a real challenge. I'll start with the simple stuff. My name's Matthew. I'm 40 in a couple of weeks' time, and my job, or rather the stuff that I get paid to do, is helping organizations work out what the future of their business looks like, and then helping them make that happen sooner and better. If you are looking to change the way that you work, or the things that you do, or how you go about stuff, 9 times out of 10, that's going to involve people in some way. You know, these pesky things called human resources that we have. And designing around getting the best out of them to your organizational goals. I've been in a number of organizations, including the last role which I had, where I was a team leader and involved in a project to redesign the culture that we had at the agency. And you recognize very quickly that you can't get anything done if you're not designing people into that process.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's more of a passion and a interest than a vocation. And I suppose my personal mission at the moment is to try and make sure that people who are stepping into doing something new are as well supported as they can be, and they've asked some really good questions of themselves before they just leap into that unknown. Leapers itself is a community of, there's about 500 of us on there now. There's a core active group of probably about 70 or so. And we're all in some way taking an active decision in the way which we want to work in the future. And you're absolutely right, that is everything from, I'm quitting my job, I'm going to go start up a yoga farm in Nepal, and yeah, I'm going to go do that, all the way down to, I have my job right now, I'm happy in my job, but it could work slightly better. So that might be, I want to move to flexible working, or I want to engage with my own teammates in a better way. And everything between that. So that might be about, actually, I want to go for that promotion, or I want to change the role which I currently have within my organization, or I want to learn more, or I want to go and start up my own thing, or work with others. Or, but the key thing is around that notion of an active decision. And I think for many people, careers are quite passive. They come along, a new opportunity comes along, it's like a job description floats across your desk, or you see something and you go, is this thing better than what I've got now? Is it making a bit more money? Is it closer to home? Or whatever your decision-making framework is.
Yeah.
And you'll make a decision based upon an opportunity, as opposed to saying, actually, I want to design something here that works for me and the employer, or whoever I'm working with. But it's an active, conscious decision. And that's what I think the biggest shift in work has been over the last, 10, 15 years, is people waking up to that this is a two-way relationship. It's not just turn up, do some stuff, get paid, go home. It's an engagement and a relationship, and it needs to be beneficial for both sides.
I think in many companies, it's that people will do as little as they can get away with in terms of how they react to people's requests, because they see it as a disruption. And the companies know that if something went to a tribunal, they are likely to be in more trouble if they've refused a flexible work request for somebody who's got a dependent child that needs them, whether it be a mother or a father, really, but more often, let's face it, is the mother. And again, that is a cultural issue. So you're right. It is very much around how we see people's roles.
It does feel that these are cultural issues, though, that stem across our society generally, rather than it just being about a particular organisation. That an organisation can try to be able to buck the trend, but it is actually going against the broader societal set of expectations. And that probably actually then sort of goes into things about how, you know, the expectations that we have a job with an employer who looks after us are the history of the industrial, since the Industrial Revolution, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the, you know, really interesting stories that I have heard as I've been doing these interviews and researching a bit more into this topic, I believe it's Shell, and they recently introduced reason agnostic flexible working requests. So anyone in the organization can put in a request to work flexibly, and they do not have to give a reason, and Shell won't ask them why they want to do that. And now that's a really simple thing that encourages people from all groups to put in a request and know that they are not going to have that questioned by their employer. And I'm like, well, why do more organizations not do that? Because actually the impact of doing something very simple like that is actually hugely positive, because we know that, you know, to create happy employees, there are a number of things that you can do. But, you know, one of the things that people want above anything else is more balance in their lives and more time. Now, that time might be for caring commitments, it might be for side projects, it might be just because you want, you know, more balance in your life, and you want, you know, you want a 3-day weekend or whatever that looks like. So the result is only positive. And so it's just a simple thing. And it really struck me that, you know, just that simple thing could have so much positive effect.
You have been interviewing, as in job interviewing, recently, not you being interviewed, but you interviewing others for a public sector client. And you reflected on that you saw quite a different attitude around flexible working.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, public sector are leaps ahead of the private sector when it comes to flexible working. It was yesterday. I was in all-day interviews. I was on a panel. I was the only non-civil servant there because I'm a contractor for them, but they'd asked me to get involved with the interviews for a particular role. It's a people leader role. It's a very critical role in the organisation and fairly senior. We saw six candidates during the day, and one of the candidates who was in public sector currently. And at the end of the interview, we said, you know, do you have any questions? And this particular candidate said, yeah, I have a question. I work 4 days a week. Is that going to be a problem in this role? And without missing a beat, the deputy directors, civil servants, that's very senior grade for people not familiar with public sector grading, around the table, without missing a beat, they went, yeah, not a problem at all. And, you know, so again, it's just it's a culture thing. And it was fascinating to me because I reflected on my own experiences of where I've been interviewing people in private sector, or I have, you know, been the interviewee. And the level of nervousness around saying I work anything other than a traditional working pattern is very high. And if that same question had been asked in the vast majority of private sector organisations, there would have been a sharp intake of breath at that point. And, we'd have to see, you know, the contrast between the automatic, yeah, not a problem, we can absolutely make that work, versus what you would experience in private sector was so stark. we talk about submitting flexible working requests and how employers respond to those, but that assumes you are already in the organisation. And I think off the top of my head, the legislation says that you have to have been employed for, is it 26 weeks or something? So you're already there, okay? But there is another side to this in how do you attract people into your organisation that, you know, want to work in a flexible way and anything out of that, you know, Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. I think that's another huge challenge for organisations to kind of get their head around, because there is so much talent out there that wants to, you know, would do an amazing job for those organisations, but they are ruling themselves out of the process because you look through the job description and you see full time and you're like, oh well, forget that. I saw an event that was being put on by one of the big tech companies, and it was aimed at women returning to work after raising their children. And it focused on the confidence. So these women need to have their confidence built up again to return to work. And I looked at that and I was like, okay, like I'm a mum. I know many other mums, and I don't know a single one of them that needs to have their confidence built up to return to work. Right. What they want are truly flexible roles and the option to work outside of a traditional working pattern. That's what they want. And so I looked into this event a little bit more and I was like, well, so I get that you're trying to attract, you know, women into the workplace. I don't agree that they need to have their confidence built up, but what roles are you offering them? And the roles that were kind of on offer seemed to be traditional full-time roles, but hell, you can work from home occasionally. I'm like, we're so missing the point here. We're so missing the point that, you know, if you put yourself into the shoes of a mum, and I'll make it clear again, just in case I haven't made it already clear, this is not a mum thing by any stretch of the imagination, but I happen to be one and I can't escape that. But why are we not creating truly flexible roles to encourage people into the workforce who would do an amazing job? Why is the focus not there? It just seems counterintuitive to me that you would kind of focus on something where people have an assumption. And somebody made the comment to me on Twitter. He said, if you tell a group of people enough times that they don't have the confidence to return to work, you're going to end up with a whole load of, you know, a whole group of women that go, oh, I've got no confidence, I need to go on some kind of return to work course, you know. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, but that's not what they need or not what they want. What they want is to feel reassured that the employer is going to offer them a variety of patterns that they can choose to work in, and that this notion of being able to work from home when, you know, occasionally, that's not flexible working. That doesn't offer me any flexibility at all.
So what comes next? We've had maybe half a dozen interviews or so. Have you got gaps in the groups that you've spoken to?
Yeah, I was thinking, well, firstly, I do not want this podcast to become another, you know, piece of content out there talking about flexible working where everybody just nods their heads in agreement. I want it to you know, become more of a discussion on lots of different perspectives. And so I don't want to just talk to people who have the same experiences as me, or people that, you know, think the same as me. That's just an echo chamber, and that's no good to anyone. So I was thinking about like the gaps that I have, because I've got lots of interviews already done, many, many more lined up for the new year. So I'm excited for that. But the gaps for me are, I would love to talk to industries where flexibility might be difficult, you know, traditional, you know, think of legal or healthcare or education, etc., and indeed big corporate organizations, because I'd really love to get under the skin with them around why it's hard and kind of challenge a little bit on, is this really hard, or are we just kind of making excuses and not, you know, just doing it. I would also really love to talk to somebody about productivity, because I read something this week that said, there was a piece of research done, and somebody who works 70 hours a week achieves absolutely nothing more than someone who works 15 fewer hours. And I was like, that's really interesting. And I would love to explore productivity and the economics kind of behind it with somebody. And then I think the last gap that I kind of thought about for now, I'm sure there are many more, is I'd love to talk to somebody about HR technology, because my own experience of trying to enable flexible working as a people manager within a large corporate organization is that I was very bound and constrained by the tools and the processes that I had to follow, you know, like from the thing that you spits you out a cost center for your headcount, to the tool that would churn out a contract for somebody who you were offering a role to. Like all of that, those were the things that constrained me alongside the culture of the organization. And so I'd really like to speak to somebody who operates in that space as well.
If you'd like to be able to get involved in the next few episodes, then you can get in touch with us at Flexi Movement on Twitter. We're, I think, really open and interested in anyone who's got an opinion within the space. I think particularly about people who see it as a challenge and see it as maybe not something that is as necessary as maybe we do.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say the biggest thing for me right now is I don't want this to turn into lots of people agreeing with each other that flexible working is a great idea. I really want this to become action oriented. So there's so many people out there doing stuff around flexible working, you know, communities going on, getting conversations going, but I don't see much in the way of tangible action on behalf of employers or individuals. And so I would love to hear feedback from, you know, people that are listening on what would be helpful to you. Either you're an individual who wants to work flexibly, or you're an employer who wants to enable more flexible working and change the culture in your organization. So if anyone has any suggestions or feedback on what would be helpful, then I can think about how attach some resources to each episode on, you know, the little actions that people can take, and how can I start to share the stories of where people are seeing success. So yeah, would love to get feedback on that as well.
We should consider this a call to action, shouldn't we, really, for business leaders, who, if any business leaders are complaining that they can't recruit or retain really good people, then why aren't they thinking about doing something along these lines? Let's talk to them. Let's find out what's stopping them.
You can find out more about the Flexible Movement at flexiblemovement.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at FlexiMovement. And we'd love you to subscribe on iTunes to the podcast, and even better, leave us a review.